Good.
Stragglers.
There are some stragglers, I think. I think Senna would be here. She's also not feeling that well.
It's warm.
You're surrounded by the heater. Is that her?
It's on.
Om Avyayantu Mamangani Bhakranas Chakshushrotramato Balamindriyani Chasarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranamastvanirakaraname astu Tadatmani nirate ya upanishatsu dharmaste mai santu te mai santu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti
Let's do verse 5. Just continuing on some of this verse. Atha adhyatmam
yadetad gachati
vacha. Yadetad gachati
vacha
mano manaha anena
manaha anena
chaitad upasam chaitad upasmarati
chaitad upasmarati
abhikshnan sankalpaha
abhikshnan sankalpaha.
Let's send it again. Atha adhyatmam yet etat gachati iti gachati eva evacha manaha anena cha etad upasmarati abhikshnam sankalpaha. So atta adhyatmam, now the adhyatma adesha, so this adesha using a certain image, like a simile or like a comparison, for instance, trying to explain through like a visualization in a sense, Brahman, or how one gains knowledge of Brahman from the standpoint of the self focused on the adhyatma. So atta adhyatmam yad etad. Yad means the Brahman, that Brahman which is being revealed by the Upanishad, the Brahman that we've been talking about. Tad, so that Brahman, gachati eva cha manaha, the mind, as though, eva, goes toward that Brahman. Anena, by that mind, and anena, by the anena cha, and by that mind, etad upasmarati abhikshnam, it approaches, or it recognizes by means of that, the mind that's going toward the self, toward Brahman, by that mind, by means of that mind, that Brahman, upasmarati, is recognized. And then you can take abhikshnam sankalpaha. You can put abhikshnam either way, both ways. It means it goes again, it is directed again and again toward Brahman. It continues to again and again recognize Brahman. And then it says, abhikshnam sankalpaha. Sankalpa is any thought. You can take it. The buddhi, I'll make some differentiations for that. But what it means is that that sankalpa, whatever the vritti is, or whatever the memory is, whatever the recognition is, all of the different types of vrittis, that self is always recognized there. So over and over, as the sankalpa is there, the atma is recognized. And so that's what we need to kind of understand. I'll do my best. This shloka is all about how this knowledge actually works. It's kind of it's a beautiful verse. It's a big verse also. The famous verse that states, you know, the self can't be known, can't be reached by the mind or by the speech. Having gone there, having gone, trying to find it, having gone there, it returns unsuccessfully, having not been able to reach the self. It can't reach the self. The mind can't reach the self. The sense organs can't reach the self. None of our means of knowledge can reach the self. So it's just for us, in terms of the upadhi, we'll just use our mind and sense organs, which is really what, and speech also, because speech can be direct the mind. Yet it can't reach the self ever as an object, because the mind and the sense organs and every single vritti, really the sense organs are just feeding the mind vrittis. So when we think about sense organs, even though they're sattva, they can land on anything, they can objectify anything within time and space, within the creation. But as they land on it, they're creating a vritti in the mind. And so they are definitely, and even I can direct speech toward, I can describe things through vak, I can describe things, and you can learn from them the descriptions and understand, as long as there's an object or something that we're describing. But the self is not available for any of that, for any sense, for any type of objectification, whether it be by the mind or whether it be by speech or whether it be by your sense organs. And why isn't it? Because the self is already absolutely present. It's present as the very adhishtana of every single vritti. And so how is the self, which is ever present, like say for instance, if I'm looking at an object, obviously I'm going to have a vritti of the object, right? So say I'm looking at a rose, I'll have a vritti of the rose. If I'm looking up at space and the clouds, I have a vritti of that. If I'm looking, if I'm objectifying an emotion, I have a vritti of that. I'm having a meditative experience, I have a vritti of that, which, interestingly enough, the self is objectifying. Even a vritti of emotion, even a vritti, a meditative vritti, where, you know, I'm just being with my idea, you know, I'm having a meditative experience without knowledge, then I'm just illumining. The self is as the very adhishtana, the very content of the vritti, whatever that vritti may be. And so the self is the luminary because of which all the vrittis are known, but not like a luminary like the sun illumining any object in the world. Like there's a distance, here's the sun illumining the vritti, here's the atma illumining the vritti. There is no distance or space between the vritti and me. And so in fact, I am always present. I am always here, fully, completely, with or without knowledge. I am here as the luminary. So knowledge, any type of knowledge, any type, including the Vedanta Pramana, is not going to have the ability to give me an experience of an experience that is already there. Right? So how can a vritti, how can we recognize myself, which is already completely present. How can we do that? I can't be objectified by the sense objects, by the sense organs, because they're all directed. Can't wait to see what this is.
Oh, that's good.
Okay. So it's trying to illumine the illumined. We're trying to illumine the illuminator. We're trying to gain knowledge of the one that is already self-evident. And so our means of knowledge depend upon that one as self-evident, because I'm the knownness and the existence of every vritti or every thought that I have. So I'm already completely present. So how is it that this pramana, the Upanishads is a pramana, how does it actually work to give me knowledge, you know? And so what they say is that there's the use of this word eva. Like if I say the mind as though goes to myself. And by that mind, which has been directed toward myself, you know, through that mind alone, this Brahman is recognized. Through that mind alone, which through the pramana has been directed toward myself, it's by that mind that Brahman is recognized. Right? So upasmadati. The word smadati means often to remember. But to remember means really not as though we're actually going into the memory bank, so we don't think of it really like that. It's something has been revealed at the time of teaching, and I can continually recall that. That's upasmadati. Like, for instance, say at the time of teaching, the mind as though goes to Brahman, goes toward Brahman, as though approaches Brahman. What does that actually mean, and how does that take place? So we went over this quite a bit yesterday, but I don't feel it's complete, so I'm just going to keep going until I feel all right. It's good. Okay. So now we have all of these prakriyas we went through. I mentioned them, like the drishya, that see or seeing differentiation. These are prakriyas. They are means of helping you to recognize what is already here. So what is already here is like myself. This me is already here. I already am completely present. I'm not covered in any way, like by a bag or something. The covering, or the kosha, is only the kosha, the covering of ajnanam. And so ajnanam is creating a situation for me where, from the standpoint of my body, mind, sense organs, from the standpoint of my upadis, from their standpoint, they are me. From their standpoint. That's why I kept saying the 50% correct. For them, their standpoint, there is no distance because nitya, right? Like clay pot. There is no distance or barrier at all between me, the self-evident me, and these upadis. So the body, because of the sense of touch, enjoys consciousness. So there is nothing, no type of experience in the way that would cause it to not recognize itself as a conscious being. I can't look around and see, no, there's some self over there, out there, that's the consciousness. I'm the consciousness, and this body, as an upadi, because of the sense of touch, enjoys that consciousness, and there's no distance between the two. That's why in this Upanishad, it's the ear of the ear, the eye of the eye, to the mind of the mind. What it's trying to do is show the satya-mitya relationship between myself and the upadi, when there's no distance, no space in between, no subject-object relationship between myself and the body. There is, once it's pointed out, but not from the perspective of my sense of touch in the body. My self-experience is that, you know, I, this body, am a conscious being. My experience is I am my thoughts. Whatever thought is there, that's my thought. Whatever emotion is there, that's my emotion. And so there's what we call, because of this self-ignorance where there's no viveka or discrimination has taken place, there's what we call, important word from Swamiji's vocabulary, there's this what we call anyonya adhyasa that naturally takes place. for everybody. That's another problem, is that everybody's suffering from the same self-ignorance. And so this mutual superimposition is very natural, not from the standpoint of the Atma, but from the standpoint of the mind and the sense organs, which, you know, and the sense of touch especially. And anyonya means mutual. And that mutual superimposition is caused fully, the direct, immediate effect, the karya, of self-ignorance. Because what it does is it causes this body, mind, sense organs, everything we call an upadhi, to take the conscious being, which is its adhishtana, because it doesn't know it's mithya, so to take this, the conscious being, the me, which in fact is its adhishtana, to be itself. That's why I say, why wouldn't it? What is maya, what is an adhishtana, it has no other being. That's how radical it is. It's like, why wouldn't the pot take itself to be clay? There is nothing else there but clay. And the clay is the pot, so of course it will take itself to be the pot. Its problem is it doesn't recognize that it is mithya, and really there's only clay there. That's because of the ignorance on the part of the pot. The clay ignorance of the pot. That clay ignorance has to be removed so the pot can recognize, I really am only clay, and the nama of this nama rupa is only mithya, because there's nothing else there but me, the clay. That's what has to happen. That's our situation. From this body, mind, sense organs, because of the nature of the mind and the sense organs, there's this mutual superimposition. There's no distance at all between mithya and the self. You know, and so the mind enjoys consciousness fully. So its experience is, you know, I am the conscious being, and then the I am me, the conscious being, and me, this conscious being, you know, is moody and this and that. It's moody if I take myself to be the body. Sometimes I'm, you know, sometimes I'm tired, and sometimes I have lots of energy. Sometimes I have digestive problems. Whatever is going on in this body, I take to belong to myself because of this mutual imposition. The body becomes me, and I take on the qualities of the body. Not the self, the mind. There's a twofold superimposition on the part of the mind that doesn't recognize myself. There's no viveka there, doesn't recognize. So that twofold superimposition is I, the body, I become the self, and the self takes on all the qualities of the body, including coming into being and going out of being, the birth and death, sickness and health, becoming old, dying. All of these things become something that belongs to my nature. That's the mutual superimposition that naturally takes place when I haven't recognized my own nature. That's the I'm still subject to that ajnanam. This ajnanam has to be removed in order for me to let the body be the body, the mind be the mind, the sense organs be the sense organs, and me be me. So that I can recognize, I recognize myself as being totally, from my own standpoint, totally free of any upadhi. And I have to, there's many different ways, many different prakriyas that help me to recognize that. And those prakriyas, what they do, in one way or another, they actually direct the mind as though toward myself. I say as though because I already am the self of the mind, and there is no distance between the mind and me. So where is it going to travel to? It says gacchati. The mind has to go toward Brahman. It has to be directed toward Brahman. But the mind already is Brahman, right? Because satya mithya. So there's nowhere for it to go. So it has to as though go. So how does it as though go? Well, the first thing that all of these prakriyas have to do is differentiate through viveka the subject-object relationship. If my mind is landing on, so this is the eva. My mind is landing on this body, for instance, as me, okay? And so now there's an as though differentiate. There's like an as though distance, an as not a real distance, an as though distance between my body and me, in the sense that now my mind has to recognize the existence of a subject-object differentiation, right? Where I recognize that this body, so this is what we mean by this gacchati eva, this as though going. I recognize this body is something which my mind is aware of, that my mind can objectify, right? Through the sense of, through all the five sense organs, this body becomes an object that I'm aware of. Me, the conscious being, is the subject to start with. This body is an object to me. That means I am the subject. Everybody see that? If I see this body, I'm experiencing this body as an object. Who's experiencing it as an object? I say, I'm experiencing it as an object. So now there's a distance as though. There's a subject-object as though distance. So now I have the mind that has recognized this differentiation, subject-object, and that this body is being objectified. But what we want to know is not what's being objectified, but the one who's objectifying, right? The subject. So now what does the prakriya have to do? It has to say, well, why is this body is objectified by the sense organs? Okay, I understand that. But then let's see who the self is in reference to this objectified body. I say, well, the same sense organs that objectify this world objectify this body. That's how it's known. If you didn't have your sense organs, it wouldn't be known. And so now I've moved. This is where we get this gacchati eva, this distance. Now I move in a step, more inward, to the sense organs. Now I'm the sense organs because of whom this body is objectified. So there's the subject-object relationship between my sense organs and this body. And so now, but I recognize, again, because of the prakriya, that these sense organs are known, if they're functioning or not functioning. So now, again, there's a separation, a subject-object, because the sense organs are known. So who is the knower? There's a differentiation. So now the mind is as though moving. I mean, the now through the mind, I'm recognizing these things. The mind is as though moving inward. And so now the mind recognizes, oh, I'm the one. I, the mind, am the one because of whom these sense organs are known. And the sense organs are the ones because who the body in the world is known. So here you see the kind of movement, as though movement. All the while, the sense, the self is completely present. So there's really, it's as the adhishtana. So there's really no movement, but as though. So now we've moved inward. I am the subject, the one because of whom the sense organs, the body, and the world is known. So I am the subject. Now I am the Atma. But now the problem is that the mind itself is known. And so now I have to move inward again to find the subject, the one because of whom this mind is known. And the mind is going to include any type of vritti. Any vritti is the mind. And so I have to say, I have to discover the one because of whom all of these vrittis are known. So again, we have to move inward. You can stop there for a moment as the ahankara. Well, I must be the I thought, the ahankara, the me, that particular type of thought in the mind that says I must be that. You know, so again, you're trying to move closer to find ultimately where you can land, where the mind can land as though, where the mind can recognize that one who cannot be objectified. And when it recognizes that one who cannot be objectified, then that subject-object difference, that travel, the travel of the mind, inward, 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 as though to myself, comes to an end. But it would have wanted to come to an end when it reached the itself as the mind. I am the conscious being. I am the mind because of which the sense organs and everything else is known. But then, of course, the teacher won't stop there. He'll say, yeah, but your mind itself is known. All of your thoughts are known. All of your emotions are known. And as you're saying, well, that's true. My thoughts are known. My emotions are known. My feelings, my relationships, so you just, Swamiji sometimes will go all, your relationships are known, all of your experiences are known, space is known, you know, the time itself is known, your ignorance is known, your knowledge is known. Every time you say something like that, there is now a distance between all of these things and you, and as though distance. Because these are the objects, and you are the subject. So now the situation, you get to this situation, the mind is as though going inward, inward, inward until what? Now just from the pratyagatma, from the innermost, from its innermost most standpoint, from the innermost self, pratyak is innermost, it comes to just, it's left with just me. It can't go beyond that. I can't go beyond the knower, except there's again, you get to the ultimately to what you call the knower, right, in reference to the mind and all of the vrittis. Now you have that subject-object relationship. All of these things are objects. And so in terms of your own nature, those are discarded as not you. They're recognized as anatma, not your being. Okay, now the situation is you're still the knower. In the Driksha Viveka, you get to the knower that has no one, the knower with nowhere to go. Okay. But the funny thing here, when we get to this position of the knower with nowhere to go, no more subject object available to, then you say, well, the question is this me? This is me. And even when we meditate, you know, when you're just being, kind of being yourself, being with yourself, this me, it has nothing behind it. And you know what? It has nothing in front of it either. Because when you get to me, the conscious being, right, the conscious being has objectified the mind and the sense organs and all of the objects of knowledge that we have available. The sense organs are object, are pramanas that we use to know the world. The mind also and the buddhi, those are objectified. Those are means of knowledge that we also use to negotiate the world, and we also use the buddhi to gain self-knowledge. Okay, but now here I am. We've gotten so to the ultimate knower in the subject-object relationship. And now how is that knower going to be a knower? Because there's no mind from the standpoint of the self. There's no sattva, rajas, and tamas from the standpoint of the self. There's no sense organs from the standpoint of the self. So there's no instrument for knowing. Like if you look in the world, all of our knowledge, subject-object knowledge, all of our means of knowledge require a knower, knowing, known relationship. So they require some sort of a pramana, whether it be all of my individual sense organs, you know, or inferences and different types of means of knowledge that all depend upon those sense organs and that subject-object differentiation. All of these things are necessary for me to know anything. And now I've turned all of those things into objects themselves. And so now the question comes, am I a knower? Am I a knower that is knowing these things? And you have to say, how can I be a knower when all of the means of knowledge are themselves objects, have been objectified? And so then we're left with me as the conscious being, because of whom the sense organs are illumined, because of whom the eyes see, enjoy consciousness, because of whom the ears hear, and the sense of touch feels, and the sense of taste tastes, and the sense of smell has smells scent. I'm the one that enlivens all of those sense organs to do their job in the world. I am the one that enlivens the mind. Enlivens means give consciousness, conscious being to the mind, for its thoughts to be known, for its feelings to be known, for the buddhi, for the buddhi vrittis to be known. I'm the one that gives conscious being to the mind to do its work. So I am, in fact, the mind of the mind. I'm the one that lights up, gives conscious being to the sense organ. So I am the shrotrasya shrotra. I am the ear of the ear and the eye of the eye. Because without me, without conscious being, there can't be a seer and a hearer and a thinker and a feeler. All of these things depend upon consciousness. But when these instruments the instrument of the mind that takes in all of the data from the sense organs and the sense organs one by one, without me, they're not enlivened. They have no existence and they have no consciousness. They can't do their job. But me as consciousness, what am I doing? Because I've objectified all the doers and I've objectified all of the things that exist in samsara. In fact, the whole samsara is objectified. So I'm not really a knower. I am the conscious being, the me, because of which the knower can know its object. The mind can know its thoughts, right? The mind can objective, can so the vrittis can be known. The sounds can be heard. The objects, the color can be seen. If you take me away, then there is no such chit, there is no existence, and there is no knowledge. There's no consciousness. So I am the one because of whom all of these things function. But without me, none of them will function. But now, understanding that from my own self experience, but I say that I'm a knower. This is the Atma. Am I a knower? No, I'm not. I require these upadis for there to be subject-object differentiation. I'm not a knower, but I am the one because of which everything is known. And is it because of which things are known? Really, if we go a little bit deeper, is it because of myself that things are known? Or is it that my self-evident being, you know, so you have to just look at the language so that the language isn't in a way confusing us. This self-evident being, this consciousness, why do I say self-shining or self-evident? Swatta Siddha means self-evident. It means I don't require anybody to come and light me up because I'm the light. I don't need another consciousness to illumine me because I am that consciousness. So I don't require a pramana or a means of knowledge. I am self-evident. And self-evident, why? Because swaprakasha. These two words are important, swaprakasha. That means that I'm self-shining as consciousness. I am my own consciousness. I don't need another consciousness to light me up. I am my own being, my own existence. I don't need another to borrow an existence. I am the existence because of which everything exists. I am the consciousness because of which everything becomes as though self-evident. I am the self-evident nature which everything enjoys through means of knowledge, through the different means of knowledge I have. I am the conscious being because of which the mind, right, enjoys consciousness. I'm the conscious being because of which the sense organs enjoy consciousness. They themselves are totally dependent on me for their existence in consciousness. How do you know they don't enjoy existence in consciousness? Because they're objectifiable, number one, as an object. I remain the conscious being. Consciousness remains with me. They become objectified. And so, and also, as we analyze all of these things, the sense organs and the objects of consciousness, they are continually changing. They are the variables. The so-called knower and known are the variables coming into being and going out of being continually, right? Coming into consciousness and going out of consciousness continually. They don't have any consciousness of their own. One good thing, way to understand that too, like your sense organs are dependent on the self in the final analysis, but they're also very dependent on your mind for their consciousness. If your mind isn't using the sense organs, then what? They're not known. They're just dormant, not functioning at all. If they had consciousness, your mind could be doing everything that it wanted to do, and they would be doing everything they want to do. They're enjoying consciousness. But no, that's not true. Your mind has to use them. And so the consciousness that the mind is enjoying is then given to the sense organs. Without that, the sense organs are dormant. And so then the mind gets closer and closer to the self. But because the mind is also objectified and known, you know, it itself doesn't have consciousness. And another kind of, what do you call it, like the knockout punch, as Swamiji will say, is when you are in deep sleep, the mind is asleep. There's no functioning mind there. You know what else about deep sleep? In the deep sleep, there's no knower. Because the mind and sense organs are in unmanifest condition. And so there is no knower. When there's no, if the self can be without a knower or knowership, then knowership does not belong to the self. If you can be without, this is also a good meditation to really get this, because if you can be without an experience, that experience does not belong to you. It's not your swarupa. It's not your swabhava. It's not your nature, because you can be without it. So anything that you can be without is not you. You can be without knowership, so you are not a knower. You cannot be without being, without existence. You cannot be without consciousness. Consciousness is not knowership. Knowership requires subject-object relationship. The only place where the subject-object relationship takes place is within duality, it's within the creation, where you have the jivas with their sense organs, or you have Ishvara with the whole sattva pervading the whole creation. Then that experience of Ishvara, still there's no knower. Ishvara is also not a knower, the Ishvara self. Ishvara self is yourself, is Brahman, is just consciousness. But consciousness lights up the whole Maya Upadhi, and so from the standpoint of the Maya Upadhi, it is known. It is me. The whole Ishvara Upadhi is me, because me is just a word that we use to identify myself. I am the conscious being that reflects in the entire Ishvara Upadhi, and so what does that mean? It's so abstract. That me, I am the one that is the self of the whole Ishvara Upadhi. And I am the one that is the self of this body, mind, sense organs. And I am the one who is the self of all body, mind, sense organs, because just think of this. When we're going through this teaching methodology, all of us are doing it together. So all of us, say, just in this room, all of us are recognizing that there's a subject-object relationship with the body. The body is objectified by the sense organs. All of us, we're all realizing this together right now. So that means none of us. All of us are recognizing that none of us are our body. The body is objectified. We're all together realizing that we are not our sense organs. The sense organs are objectified. We're all realizing that we're not our mind, not vrittis, because they're objectified. We're all realizing that we're not space. Space is objectified. We all realize that our knowledge and our ignorance, we're not that, because both are objectified. And so, in fact, we realize that the whole creation, Ishvara, the whole Maya Upadhi, is objectified. Anything that can be known is objectified. Anything that can enjoy a subject-object relationship is objectified. So now I'm left with myself, right? And myself cannot be objectified. And yourself, you're left with yourself, and yourself cannot be objectified, right? Yourself cannot be an object within samsara, because then it can be objectified. And it's differentiated, it's object within space. You're not an object within space, because space is objectified. And so now, here we, each one of us, here we are, as myself, the me, I'm left with me, right? Not with somebody else, I'm left with me. And this me is not objectifiable, because then we'd go into another subject-object, and that would have to be put into the object pot. So here we are. We're all just me. But are there two of us? Are there two me's? Because each one of us is arriving at the same me, but do you have your me, and do you have your me, and do you have your me? If so, then all of these consciousness, little consciousness, are objects within space, because we have a me over here, and a me over here, and a me over here. But we objectify any, even space. It's easy for us to say, all of these bodies, we're all different from one another, and we all exist within time and space. All of our sense organs are all different from one another. There's no objection to that. It's true. All of our sense organs are different from one another. They all exist in time and space. All of our minds are certainly different. We all have different experiences and whatnot. Or even right now as we're listening, we're getting different vrittis. Yeah. One type of vritti is coming, but it's received in many different ways. So all of those vrittis are different. That's true. The ahankaras are different. True. Our perceptions are different. True. But what about the one who cannot be objectified, that is just conscious being? This me, this very personal me, which is me. Some people would often say, I don't want to be, what's the word? I don't want to be a universal me. I don't want to be twins. I want to just be me only. So please don't tell me I'm a universal me. That's awful. Okay. But what are we going to say? Because how can one me be a universal me? If there's only one me, how is that universal? It's an interesting idea. So, but what it amounts to is that this me is Brahman. This me is only one, means it is non-dual. There can't be two. Unless we start thinking of this creation, unless we don't understand the mityatva of this creation. If you understand the mityatva of this creation, there is only one me. So far, so good. And so I am you. I'm not like twins or anything. It's not like, what it's not like, this is a common mistake. We think, okay, I am Brahman. And Brahman, we think of, you know, it's like infinite. And so say if we think of Brahman is like this, this stands for infinite, then your little dot of Brahman here, and your little dot here, and your little dot here, and your little dot, no. There's no space. So there's no dots. You know, there's no, you're this little piece of consciousness, and I'm over here, and you're here, and you're here. No, there's no space. So that means when we say, I am you, it's not that I am a part of you, or that we're each a little piece of the infinite Brahman. No, we each are that infinite Brahman, which we don't use the word infinite really, because it's too spatially oriented. So we say Brahman is non-dual, one without a second. This what gets into these things we were doing yesterday, the sajatiya, the vijatiya, and the swagata beta, these type of betas, these type of divisions that we can make. All of those divisions require maya. They require time and space. For me, there's no such division. And all of these things that exist within time and space are coming into being and going out of being. So they are the variables. They have no being of their own. They come into being and go out of being. They're continually changing. There's no exception. There's no changeless vritti. Every vritti is continually changing, changing, changing. But the adhishtana, the invariable, which is me, the me which is you, the me which is Ishwara, the self of all beings, I'm the invariable. I'm never changing in any way. And so that, in a way, makes all of this easy, because a variable is a variable. It changes and changes and changes. So anything that changes is not you. Anything that changes is mithya. It's good for meditation. What doesn't change? Let me just zero in on the mind as though directing itself toward that ultimate subject. Remember this kind of false or this illusionary distance between what is mitya and the adhishtana. There's really no distance. Like, what's the distance between the pot and the clay? There's no distance at all. There's really only clay. And here there's no distance between conscious being, right, and mitya. There's no distance, but from the standpoint of the jiva, I have to go through all of these koshas, all of these layers where one is more subtle or innermost than the other. So there's as though this distance where my mind is as though turning toward me. But as it turns toward me, okay, so this is a little one step here. As it turns toward me, as though, because of this teaching, what is the distance between the mind and the self? Mitya and satyam. It's the same as the clay pot. There's no distance whatsoever. And so the turning also is only, or the going toward the self is also just an as though going. It's just that the mind, instead of its focus being on something that can be objectified, its focus is on its very being, its very self. And there's no distance between the self and the mind. So now we say the mind as though is recognizing the self. It's as though recognizing the self, which is an interesting way of saying it. I used the term yesterday, this vritti-vyapti and pala-vyapti. The vritti-vyapti, it just simply means that the mind normally, whatever is the vrittis, whatever it's directed toward, gains a thought modification with that content. So if I'm looking at the wall hanging, I have a vritti of the wall hanging, which then, as I have that vritti, it's then I become the knower of the vritti. Just within samsara, I become the knower of the vritti. As soon as the vritti occurs, means the mind has pervaded the vritti. That's called vritti-vyapti. Vyapti means pervades the vritti. So my sense organs look at an object, I see the wall hanging, I have a vritti of the wall hanging, which then is known. Because the vritti takes place, has its force, adhishtana, has me, as its being, as its consciousness. So the vritti occurs, and then it becomes known as it occurs. But here, when I direct the mind really toward the adhishtana, toward its own truth, what is actually there, because satyam mitya, the mind has no being of its own, then what happens is as though the mind goes toward the self, the only thing that's happening there is the vritti vyapti, right? Is that now I become as though the vritti of the mind, but there's no what we call pala vyapti, there's no knower left to illumine the mind, because the mind has turned toward its own being, right? It's not looking outward anymore through a pramana. It's going in as though resolving into its adhishtana. And that adhishtana is consciousness, right? The consciousness that usually objectifies some sort of vritti within maya, like the wall hanging or like a rose, or if I look outside or look at all of you, these are just vritti after vritti after vritti. Those are all illumined because of the adhishtana, me. They all enjoy me. But what about when the vritti as though turns toward me? And then what happens is that there's no one to illumine me because I'm the illuminaire. I'm the luminary. So what is just left? The vritti has for its content its own being, its own adhishtana, and that adhishtana is consciousness, conscious existence. And so that problem is solved. There's nobody that needs to illumine consciousness. Consciousness is the illuminator, so there's only this vritti-vyapti and the self, which is just the luminary of the vritti, the consciousness which the vritti enjoys as its adhishtana. So now say, this is all taking place, you know, flashing through as one gains knowledge, as this pramana is functioning. And now having recognized myself, differentiating me from all these invariables, from all the variables, I'm always the constant because of which these things are and are known. I'm an invariable. You can never get rid of me. I'm always feel every vritti as the adhishtana, not as something that can be objectified, but that which is itself self-evident. Does it need to be objectified? Because it's consciousness itself. So, now, this upasmadati, once I recognize, I can always bring my mind back because I'm always there. In fact, even I can, all of my sankalpas, every sankalpa, every thought that I have, sankalpa, take sankalpa now, it's just a thought. Every thought that I have has me as its adhishtana. You can't have a thought that doesn't have you as its adhishtana. Now the question is, once I recognize myself as free of these dresses, and now I bring back the mithya thoughts, any thought, then am I recognized or not? Once I know myself as the adhishtana, the one who is always there as the invariable, and all of these things are coming and going, I am the invariable, is that self-evident or not? It's self-evident because it's consciousness. I've always been exactly this. But because of self-ignorance on the part of the mind, I've taken the mind to be me. I've taken the body to be me. I take the sense organs to be me. Now I recognize that they're all mithya, and they enjoy me completely, but I am completely free from them. I'm the invariable. I'm the invariable me. Then I recognize, yeah, no matter what experience I'm having, I am there. The me is the invariable. This very personal me is the invariable. There's no time that I'm not there, no matter what the thought is. Now, see, your mind has a moment of forgetfulness, and it just gets lost in itself. Right? So now here it is. It's built a big web of problems for itself and whatnot. And then all of a sudden you kind of wake up and to what it's doing, you know, and like the jiva has risen its head and you're lost in this samsara as though. How far away is this mess of vrittis, you know, that have gotten themselves in trouble as though? How far away are they from you? From conscious being? Are those vrittis known? Is all this angst and all the trouble I've gotten myself into, are they known or not? Do they exist or not? Yeah, they're known and they exist. How far are you then away from that mess of vrittis? There's no distance. So how long does it take for me to get back to myself? How long does it take? I'm already there. I'm already there. So it's just the slightest recognition. It's not even a moment of recognition. It's the smallest moment you can imagine of recognition, because there is no distance between this mess of vrittis and myself. It's not like the mind has to, as though, oh my gosh, look at how far I've gone. Look at how far I've gone from myself. Let's make the trek and make our way back. No. You can be in the worst mess, and in less than an instant, yourself is there. You were there all along. You're completely there. The mind just got taken away, and just immediately it turns in there and all's well. You can do that abhikshanam sankalpa, instantaneously, again and again and again. So say the mind is just functioning normally. You're there as the adhishtana. You're just there fine, blessing the mind. You know, when Swamiji was asked, you know, because he would work so much, he'd get up like at 4 in the morning and go to bed at 11 at night, seeing people all day long, doing everything, and no break. Somebody asked him, Swamiji, you know, how do you do it? Don't you get exhausted? I mean, imagine, really, I would, if it was getting up at 4 in the morning and then you have your tea and you take your shower and you have your breakfast and zoom, you go through the whole day with very little break, you know? What he said was, no, I rest between thoughts. I rest between thoughts. It's not really between thoughts, you know, because he's not lost during the thought, right? But it just means that, you know, his mind is just with the self, because you know the self. You know the self even when you're an ajnani. It's not that the self isn't self-evident. It's the same self that's there for the ajnani and for the jnani. It's exactly the same. Nothing happens. It's not like the self, you know, presents itself. You're always exactly the same. But the difference is on the part of the mind that has realized its own mithyatva. How the whole mind has you fully, completely for its being. And you're never covered at all. So the means of knowledge are a little tricky in a way, because you're never not there. But the problem isn't your problem. It's not the problem for the self. It's the problem for the body-mind sense organs, which do have a problem. They're searching for you. They're searching for their self out here in the world. Let me be whole. Let me be complete. Because all of these vrittis and all this unconscious material keeps as though washing over the mind, and then as though competing with my own nature. So all of this stuff has to be straightened out. And then what happens? It's still exactly yourself. The self that has always been me. But the ruckus that the problems that the vrittis are able to cause resolve because they don't need to find me. out there somewhere. They don't need to find my well-being out here, dependent upon you and you and you and the environment, and that I get my way with this and this and this so I can have a moment of shanti. Or just go into deep sleep, you know, have some shanti like that. Because the mind is upset. We have all of these different ways for calming down the mind, and the best one is dharma. Dharma, because it's long-lasting. Dharma gives shanti. Still a relative shanti, but at least I feel like myself, you know, because of the shanti in the mind. Dharma is the strongest for giving shanti. But then we have dharma as the underlying one that creates a kind of a longer-lasting shanti. And as with knowledge, we also have all of these means within samsara, the body, mind, sense organs, to handle our mind, you know, to bring shanti to the mind, to objectify the mind, to come into the relationship with the mind as the inner friend, which is just the buddhi filled with myself. That's what it is. The inner friend is a buddhi that has enough shanti to be pervaded by my own swarupa, instead of it being pervaded by a negative vritti. It's pervaded by me. Not that the me is pervading, it's just that the mind has become quiet. And so its status is not really different from my own nature. And so that inner friend I bring to all of these problems. And then the problems resolve in that love, which is that the feeling of being separated from the self is our problem. Separated from, as though from love. And so the inner friend goes in and helps, you know, helps those problems, bring them back home. You end up bringing the little ones back home to yourself. Just like you bring your own buddhi back home to yourself, you bring all the little ones back home to that secure space. So, Om Tat Sat.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.